まもなく特急ポット浄土行きが到着します。黄色い線までお下がりください。
Hello everyone, and welcome to another Furidashi Chill Rant, another sort of brief episode in between our bi-weekly podcast. It's just me this week, it's just Nicholas. Lauren is once again in her secret bunker doing secret things, secretly, I guess. anyway, she'll be back next week. We have a great episode in store. We're going to be recording it later today, and it's going to be so amazing and so awesome. I hope I'm not overhyping this. But before I get into my rant for this week, I just want to remind you that you can find us on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, also at Podbean, and wherever else fine podcasts are sold. I think we're on Spotify as well. It would really help us out if you're a fan of the show to rate and review us on iTunes, because that really helps with the algorithm and getting us out to, you know, as many people as possible. So this week I wanted to sort of loosely follow up on something that I had kind of broached in my first chill rant, and that's the idea of sort of the feel of a game. And this is going to be sort of like it's hard to explain this in purely analytical terms, like how a game feels to someone as they're playing. And once again, speaking as a somewhat older person, without the Twitch reactions of, you know, a younger individual, my opinions are obviously going to be fairly biased, but they're also informed by, you know, a fairly long life playing a lot of different kinds of video games and a lot of different sort of eras in the history of video game technology and especially graphics. So in addition to sort of that amorphous, like affective, and that's affective with an A, feel of a game, I also kind of want to talk a little bit about like cinematic aesthetics in video games, and especially like the stylized cinematic aesthetics of games, especially because like I feel like something has been lost. I'm approaching this from the perspective of having recently played some, not a lot, of the Final Fantasy VII remake. So I played the original Final Fantasy VII all the way up until the end, all the way up until spoilers. Something happens and you have to fight somebody who was important to the main character of Cloud's life. And there are aspects of the sort of PlayStation era Final Fantasy games, which I should note, only Final Fantasy VII did I play. Strangely enough, I played it on the PS2, but I did play the PSX version of the game. So none of the it wasn't a remastered version of the game. It was the original version of the game, but I played it on my PS2. And then comparing the sort of like, so Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, and Final Fantasy IX. In fact, in many ways, I'm going to talk a lot about Final Fantasy VIII. And compare that with the Final Fantasy VII remake, which was recently launched for the PlayStation, for the PS4, and how frankly dissatisfying I found it. Now, this could entirely be me, and so, you know, take all of this with a grain of salt, but I'm going to try to explain where my opinion comes from. And, you know, maybe if you're feeling a little dissatisfied with the sort of the remake of the game, maybe this will resonate with you, maybe it won't, maybe you at least find the opinion interesting. But I do want to get into it. And I should note that, you know, a lot of people like the Final Fantasy VII remake. I just don't happen to be one of them, and that's fine. You know, in many ways, part of it is because of like the gameplay design choices that they made for the remake. I don't particularly like action RPGs. I actually like the way the old Final Fantasy games were. I like the turn-based system. I just like that design better. It appeals to me. And in many ways, maybe that's the point, is that like that appeals to me, and I feel like that has been lost in the sort of the transition to this newer way of doing things. But I'm not 100% convinced that that's the case, because Final Fantasy XIV Online has a lot of those action RPG elements as well. And in that instance, like, it doesn't bother me. I actually really like it there. So I've been thinking a lot about, like, why is it that I find the Final Fantasy VII remake so dissatisfying? And so I have my notes sitting in front of me. I'll make some some noise with my notes. I actually wrote them out on a notepad. I usually have this in a Google Doc, but for some reason I felt the need to actually like viscerally put pen into paper this time around because I actually feel very strongly about this. So thinking a little bit about the design choices. So I touched on this a little bit. So I want to begin by saying that the games feel very different. As I noted earlier, part of that is conscious gameplay choices. Like, it is not the turn-based system that was used in the original Final Fantasy VII. That was a conscious choice. They made it, and they decided that it was going to be a different kind of game. They were like, okay, if we're going to remake this game, we're not just going to have more polygons, which is one way to do it. Like, we're actually going to remake the game. We're going to make a different, we're going to tell the same story, but we're going to make a different kind of game. And that is a conscientious choice, and I think it's a perfectly valid one. It's just one that doesn't appeal to me. But again, like, the game has sold very well, so they don't necessarily need to appeal to me, but it is a thing that happens as a result, that there is a subsector of people who have, I guess you could say, an emotional, an affective, that, again, affective with an affective attachment to the way that Final Fantasy games used to be, and now they're moving away from that. And so there is a feeling of loss. And it's a lot of these sort of subjective things, these airy-fairy things that oftentimes I notice that game designers don't really want to talk about in many ways because there isn't a good way to get a handle on them. But that feeling of loss is a really palpable one. And I think it doesn't just stem from some like absurd nostalgia. I think it also stems from the way in which games in general have changed over time. And I want to note that there are a lot of things to like about the Final Fantasy VII Remake. One, it is a beautiful game. It is a very, very pretty game. It's got more polygons. It is more photorealistic. I don't want to say realistic. Note photorealistic, because again, this gets into my hobby horses about aesthetics and so forth. But it's more photorealistic. It's grittier in a lot of ways. It has a lot of really good voice acting. You know, the original Final Fantasy VII had no voice acting whatsoever. It was entirely text-based in that regard. So, you know, there are a lot of really interesting things and a lot of interesting improvements. And if you're the kind of person who likes that sort of like, you know, if you're a person who really is into Dark Souls and wanted a Dark Souls version of Final Fantasy VII, well, here you go. Somebody made it for you. I mean, obviously, Dark Souls is a much more unforgiving game than any Final Fantasy game. But those two games have very similar feels. Like, the gameplay, the mechanics, like what you do with your hands, like the way you have to sort of be aware of what's on the screen, like even the camera, like, is very similar. The way the camera works in both those games, very similar. And that's fine. If you like that, that's great. So, but the question I have to ask is it a more enjoyable aesthetic experience? In other words, because the thing is, like, for me, there's something visceral that has been lost. And I feel like what has been lost is are those more affective qualities. In other words, it may be a visually more appealing game, but I don't know if it's a more immersive game. In fact, I actually feel like it's a less immersive game. And this goes back to something that I was saying in my first chill rant about the relationship between the old X-Wing game and the new Star Wars Squadrons. Is that Star Wars Squadrons is much more like, it's a kind of more blood pumpy game. It's a more like, blow up those TIE fighters. But the thing is, like, a lot of what it discarded, or at least if there is a relationship, in fact, I don't really think there is a clear relationship between X, even though it's been asserted. If there is a clear relationship between X-Wing and Star Wars Squadrons, I think a lot of what the latter game gets rid of from the earlier game are elements, you know, I talked a lot about sort of like, you know, the management, sort of like the craft management and loadouts and all that other stuff from, you know, the 90s era X-Wing and TIE Fighter games. That those aspects of the game lend it an immersive quality that I think is lost in a game like Star Wars Squadrons. And then Star Wars Squadrons might be immersive in a different way, but it loses those other aspects that made those previous games immersive. And I'm not entirely certain why it discarded them, but it did. And that was a choice, and it happened. Similarly, with the transition from Final Fantasy VII, the original, for the PlayStation, for the PSX, to this current version for the PlayStation 4, a lot of those elements, those sort of like those older immersive elements that games had to have, precisely because they didn't have a lot of polygons, because they weren't pretty, they weren't visually compelling in the way that a lot of modern games now are, although there are a lot of uncanny valley elements in modern games. But that's setting that aside for the moment, like assuming that it is like visually more compelling, visually more interesting. It's not just gameplay mechanics. There are also visual aspects of the game that have been lost. And I don't think that's just nostalgia. Like, I think you actually can point to them analytically. So the sort of the meat of this episode, of this week's episode, the thing that I really want to talk about is actually cameras. And the sort of the cinematic quality of the way the camera functions in, say, those older like PlayStation era Final Fantasy games versus the way the camera functions now. And it has a lot to do with, because of the fact that the Final Fantasy VII Remake is an action RPG, it is heavily dependent upon a close third-person camera. Now, many people would just describe this as a third-person camera. But again, what's interesting is that, so a lot of this terminology that you see in game design actually is derived from other fields, in this case, from literature, strangely enough. So the idea of like third-person, first, so like, that's not just a grammatical thing, but sort of the way it functions in game terminology is very similar to the way in which it's talked about, say, in literary criticism. And what's interesting is that in literary criticism, there is actually a distinction made between types of third-person narration. Now, there is this thing in literary criticism known as close third-person. Now, close third-person narrative technique is, I mean, the sort of the quintessential example of this is always Jane Austen. And so the idea is that it's not just sort of a person not in... So the idea of a third-person narration is that sort of the voice of the text is not actually like a character within it. It's because that would make it first person or second person in some fashion. In fact, but what close third person does, and so like the voice of the text is not in it, but the thing is like it still gets into characters' heads. And so instead of just like describing what's going on, oftentimes it describes things in that sort of like aloof third person way, but as if it were from the perspective of a particular individual. And so that's why I think this is analogous to what you see in a lot of action RPGs when you're talking about, you know, the way the camera functions. I mean, oftentimes it's referred to as sort of like an over-the-shoulder view. But really what it's doing, because here's the thing. When third-person cameras are talked about sort of as opposed to, say, like, you know, the first-person camera that you see in a lot of shooters, is that supposedly the third-person camera does away with, quote-unquote, a lot of the disadvantages of the first-person camera. And so one of the, quote-unquote, advantages of the third-person camera is an increased field of view. And that's true. Like, it is slightly increased. But that's talking about the camera purely from a mechanical perspective. Whereas, if you're talking about it from an aesthetic perspective and also from sort of like a gameplay field perspective, actually the close third person camera, the specific thing that I'm talking about, carries with it a lot of the same problems that the first person camera has as well. And you can actually see this in a game like the Final Fantasy VII Remake, where, so for example, in the, you know, the first major boss battle, so the game redoes the sort of the famous boss battle with the, I believe it's a scorpion tank. I'm just going to call it a spider. It's a spider tank, but it's not, that's not what it's called in game. I think it's called a scorpion tank. And so, but in the original version, you have the sort of, for most of the battle, you have a fairly fixed camera. And we'll get to that in a second. But in the remake, because of the nature of the close third person camera, the camera is much more dynamic and it's constantly in motion. And what's interesting is that even though it has a broader field of view than, say, a third person camera would have, when I played the game, I was acutely aware of how limited my field of view was. And the reason for this is because in the game, you still have to control other characters in your party. So in the case of the fight with the scorpion tank, you still have to control Barret. and you have to constantly switch back and forth between them. But the thing is, like, while you're controlling Cloud, Barrett is doing things and also taking damage. And his position is such that you can't really easily observe it. Like, you can see his health and a health bar in the bottom corner, but you don't necessarily see where Barrett is relative to where Cloud is. And this is actually really important in the fight, because the way it's designed, like, your relative position, the relative position of the character you're controlling at any given moment to the Scorpion tank is really important in terms of, like, how you do damage and what part you need to be attacking at what time. So there are things that you need to know about what the other character in your party is doing and where they are at that you actually can't see, precisely because of the use of this third-person camera. So that's one major downside. Whereas opposed to, say, like the analogous fight in Final Fantasy VII, like, you could take any given screen, at least in that sort of non-cinematic moments, and we'll talk about that in a second, you take any given screen and it actually has all the information you need to know right there. You can see Barrett, you can see Cloud, you can see the Scorpion tank, you can see what position it's tailing, you can see how much health you have, how much time there is until your next action. Like, all the information is there. And since it's more planning based, since it's kind of like a real time slash turn based system, you can plan more effectively, I feel, in that version of the game than you can in the remake. The remake is much more hack and slashy, and again, that's not a thing that appeals to me, but I think there are limitations that are being imposed upon particular encounters because of, like, there are things being lost, genuine things being lost. And so that's what I mean by sort of the third person camera introduces a lot of the same limitations. Now, this can be interesting from a psychological perspective. In fact, one of the things that the third person camera does in close third person narration is that it gets you inside of a character's head. So if you recognize that limitation, if you recognize, say, what the aesthetics of the camera are doing, not just in mechanical terms, but also in subjective terms, you can use that to good effect. And frankly, Final Fantasy VII doesn't. I mean, it doesn't have to, in the same way that Dark Souls doesn't have to, but it could have. And yet it didn't. Like, it's both sort of creating disadvantages that the original version of the game didn't have, but also not recognizing a lot of the really interesting affordances of the gameplay choices that are being made. And I think that's why I found it really dissatisfying, is that it's like it's doing a different thing, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like it's doing enough of a different thing, if that makes sense. Now, the other thing that I want to point to, because I want to keep these chill rants generally to sort of a limited amount of time, and I only have about 10 minutes left before I want to cut it off, is the sort of the dynamism. So one of the interesting things to point out about a camera and a field of view is not just its position and the field of view that it gives you, but also the motion that comes as a result. And so in Final Fantasy VII, like, things are constantly moving around. There's just like constant motion, constant dynamism, and constantly shifting perspectives. You're because when you switch from Cloud to Barrett, you don't have the same field of view. You're suddenly going from one field of view to another field of view to another field of, like, that alone is kind of disorienting. But also, like, the motion of the spider tank itself all around the environment that it's in, the motion of your characters, like the fact that, like, the camera is moving around simply by virtue of the fact that your character is constantly moving around. And in fact, one of the sort of the physiological problems that's often been noted with third-person camera perspectives is that it can actually cause nausea in some people. I didn't get nauseous, but at the same time, I still felt really disoriented. But it also means that a lot of the more, like, interesting visual things that the Scorpion tank does kind of get washed out because everything is constantly moving around. So, you know, there's one thing that the Scorpion tank does where it sort of leaps to one side of the room. And then at a point about halfway through the fight, or actually about a third of the way through the fight, leaps to another platform. Like, cinematically speaking, that could be a really interesting and sudden and shocking moment, and that could really catch you off guard. But it kind of doesn't catch you off guard precisely because it's always moving around. you're always moving around. The camera is always moving around. Everything is just constantly moving. And so you don't have that contrast between sort of moments of stillness and, I guess you could say, like moments where the anticipation of what's going to happen gets built up. And so then if you compare this to like the earlier sort of the PlayStation era Final Fantasy games, this is actually what I think their genius really is sort of understanding pacing, like, and the dynamic and sort of how pacing relates to sort of the dynamism of the camera itself. So when you think about, say, actually, I'm going to use the example of Final Fantasy VIII because of the PlayStation era games, it's my favorite, this FF8. So in that game, it's similar to the original Final Fantasy VII, where most of the time you have a fairly static camera. And, you know, you see, and again, it's a similar situation where like sort of everything you need to know is on the screen in front of you. Well, what's interesting is that whenever something really cool or sort of like whenever there's going to be like something powerful or something like interesting is about to happen, that's when the camera starts to move in these really interesting ways. And so a good example of this is when you use your guardian force, your girlfriends, your GFs, as they're called in the game. And so, like, you know, the very first time that you use, as they pronounce it, Shiva, it should be Shiva, that's actually how it's pronounced. The first time you use Shiva's diamond dust in the game, like, it's this amazing, like, cinematic experience. And in fact, I went back and sort of played the game a little and I timed it. And so the whole animation of Shiva appearing and then doing the diamond dust attack takes about 15-ish seconds. But in that 15 seconds, there are 11 cuts. That's astounding. Like, it's the camera is constantly moving. There's a really interesting moment where sort of like, so you see Shiva appear in this block of ice, and then it zooms in on her face, her eyes open, and then the ice explodes around her. And then you have the anticipatory moment of her charging up her beam, and then she releases it, and it's this huge destructive wave. The camera follows the wave, and then you see this pull-out shot of, you know, this field of ice, and then the field of ice explodes. Like, it's visually very, very interesting. And it's the sort of the cinematographic elements of that whole bit. It, like I said, it's like 15 seconds long, but the visual interest exists because of all of those like dynamic interchanges. And that would be far less interesting if it weren't the case that normally the camera is just sitting still and you see sort of like, you know, a top-down view or sort of like a bird's eye view of the fight between your character, the characters in your party, and the monster that you're fighting. In other words, the reason why it's so effective is not just because of all of the cool dynamism within those 15 seconds, but also the contrast with how the game plays otherwise. And so that's what I was saying earlier about like what is dissatisfying about the Final Fantasy XVII remake is that there's very little contrast. In other words, in thinking about sort of the pacing in a game and sort of like the visual interest and sort of the feel of the game and the building up of anticipation, like it's almost, it feels too frenetic. It's just too much. You're always moving and everything is always happening. Like you always have to be aware. You're always twitching. Like you're always mashing buttons. And I don't know, maybe I'm just an old man, but I really don't like that. And I think what has been lost from those older Final Fantasy games is precisely that sense of pacing and the way in which sort of like a very conscious attempt to control the camera and to not like overdo it creates visual interest. It creates a sort of subjective interest in what's going on. It creates like, you know, peaks and troughs of emotion, of like excitement, and then, you know, and then coming back to rest. Like all of that to me is a really interesting affective thing that the game does. And not only that, but also like you see this in the gameplay as well. Something that I didn't remember until I went back and played the Final Fantasy VII remake up until the Scorpion tank battle. So I went back and I played Final Fantasy VII up until that point. And something that I had completely forgotten is that, so there's really only one mechanic you need to know in the Scorpion tank battle in the original game. And that's that when it lifts its tail up, you don't attack. But think about that for a second. You know, in video games, we're used to the sort of frenetic, like must mash buttons, must do something. But what the game is teaching you is not to do something. the game is teaching you that it's more important to wait, to sort of let that anticipation build, to sort of like feel, to actually feel the nervous tension of like, oh, what's going to happen, rather than just being like, mush, 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 like, instead of just like hitting buttons constantly and constantly moving around, constantly dodging, it forces you to like sort of feel what is about to happen. And really, that's what I think Final Fantasy VII Remake has lost. It has lost that sense of anticipation. Or as Tim Curry says in Rocky Horror Pictures, anticipation. Like, that sort of like stretching it out and sort of like building to a moment. And then when the moment happens, it feels so much more exciting. It feels so much more interesting, precisely because the game hasn't been hitting you over the head with this dynamism the entire time. And so maybe you guys agree with me. Maybe you guys disagree with me. I would love to know. But I think I'm going to stop there for this week. Hopefully you guys get something out of these chill rants. I'm going to keep doing them until I die, maybe, but we'll have a regular episode for you guys next week. And as always, stay safe, stay healthy, and take care of each other. Bye.